Hello, grandkids. After the second of many times that it is quite possible we will be watching 5 hours of wrestling between Monday and Tuesday nights, this is Kevin DeFrango on the other end for Stunt Granny Audio number 363 is Chris Calamita. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. And if the 5 hours of wrestling every week are as good as the 5 hours this week, that will not be a problem, although I definitely have concerns about them being able to keep up the pace.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to create the level of hype that they did this week. Like, you can't introduce Finn Balor every month.
No, you can't. And well, for that matter, you can't introduce Rhino every month either.
Oh man, no, you can't. Although I would have to say that Rhino's role is probably going to be slightly less significant than that of one Mr. Balor.
What are you trying to say, Kevin?
I'm saying that he made a name in NXT so that he can make a name doing the same thing on SmackDown. Jobbing to people.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, good for him. If you can make money and you know your damn role, you know, he's kind of at that point. Huh?
I'm very, very happy for Rhino. I've seen him watching him on local indie shows for years. He never half-asses it. At the gimmick table, he's there to, make his money on his autographs and his photo op and sell his t-shirts, but he is the nicest guy, one of the nicest guys I've ever encountered, especially with kids. He has, paid his dues back after, kind of having his career the rug pulled out from under him a decade ago, and I'm very happy with the guy.
Yeah, I mean, I always remember that, Jeremy and I saw him in his second, Ring of Honor show, because they did one in Detroit, which I believe he debuted in, and then the next night was in Cleveland, and, we went to go see, ECW, not ROH. that was pretty, I liked him then and I still like him now. Again, like he's going to be a role player. Like he's not even going to be, the surprise person who takes on, Dean Ambrose at, SummerSlam.
Right. No. That's not the role he's there for. Same thing probably with Shelton Benjamin. But it'll be nice to see these guys back, especially, shoring up the roster on SmackDown. I think it's a good place for a lot of these veterans, because SmackDown is the show that has, a steeper hill to climb, as far as how the draft worked out for them.
I mean, they... I think we touched on it a little bit last week on the show, but the 3-for-2 is not really quite an equivalent, especially with Raw getting the cruiserweights.
Yeah, we still heard nothing tonight about SmackDown, getting a tag team championship, getting a women's championship. I mean, obviously, the women were featured fairly prominently on tonight's show. I mean... Becky and Talia had another nice match, and with the result flipped, as you probably would expect.
Right.
It's not gonna be the last time they're gonna face each other, especially with the other women they have on that roster. Although they did try, but one of the other four, Naomi is by far the most complete package. You, you, got some problems.
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting thing. Jeremy and I were talking about this, and we were wondering, A, if we should take Bailey off of Suicide Watch, and then started to muse that maybe the WWE is going to take a look at the women's divisions after the next... Because what did he say that the NXT TakeOver is the day before SummerSlam?
Yes, the day before SummerSlam, yeah.
So that is, again, that's kind of a prime time to get called up to. If she loses a match for the women's NXT title.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm fairly certain that sometime after SummerSlam, Bailey's going to come up. You could say that she could be the women's star of SmackDown, but I prefer her on the same brand with Charlotte and Sasha. Because you've got the history there, you've got her best opponents there. It's still going to be the, as they say, the flagship show. So I prefer on Raw, but I guess if Bailey ends up on SmackDown, I wouldn't complain too loudly about that.
Yeah, I guess the other part that made Jeremy and I think about that was just the fact that we're not completely sure that they have faith in Becky Lynch to be the top babyface there. Like, I for some reason, I just feel like she might have a short leash for some reason or another. But she kind of, well, just like all of those women, actually, and it's something that in general didn't happen this week. But something that can continue a string of good shows is that these people need to get personalities now. Like, they did a lot of, like you were talking about with the women's match, it was basically like, this is our women's division. Like, I mean, that's the segment that they had. They had a match between the two top dogs, basically. And then they're like, okay, and I thought that was a pretty good idea, really, to just at least say this is what we're working with, so that you know who everyone is.
Right. Yeah. And I enjoy the over the top entrance for Eva Marie. I thought that fit what her character is supposed to be very, very well.
I got a hoot out of that entrance.
That was pretty good. I mean, the thing is, as long as everyone knows the deal with her, as long as they know what she can, know what she can do, she's a heat magnet. There's things to even do with her, as long as you don't ever think that she has top babyface potential, as you don't think that she can be left out there for more than 10 minutes. There's a place for Eva Marie.
And they can continue to buy her time. Like, I don't know how much she can improve in the ring, but it still strikes me that, I mean, she's basically only been doing it, what, wrestling in ring for about a year at this juncture now.
Well, they were started throwing her in pretty quickly, but that was, she was very untrained and really had no business being there until she started getting her, as they put on hold, it was her specialized training out in LA with Brian Kendrick. She improved some, but then once again when she was on NXT, it almost felt like she was digressing, except for one match they did with Bayley, which was one of the smarter, more laid out matches between Bayley and Eva Marie for the NXT Women's Championship that they did sometime last year. That's maybe the best you could do with her.
Right.
But yeah, except there's a place for her. Anyone who could garner that kind of heat, there's a place for her. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like The Miz, except she's getting way more heat.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same kind of vapidness, really, in both characters. But I think, well, yeah, there's just more of a genuine dislike because of her character on Total Divas.
People know she was picked out of a catalog. She had no passion for this at all. Maybe she's developed it over time. I'm not going to say she hasn't. You know, now after almost 3 years, but you know, people know that she wasn't any good. She was, part of that's not her fault. She was just, you know,
she was put in the spot.
You know, she said that, you know, that they wanted her for red carpets and fashion shoots, and then in between that, it was just say, hey, go out there and have a match. She was never formally trained until she started working with Brian Kendrick. And then they probably put her on NXT TV from there too soon.
Yeah, agreed. So I that's it. I still think her ceiling is kind of limited. She does not, because a lot of people that have some type of athletics background seem to kind of catch on pretty quick.
Yeah, I don't see that with her. And
right.
Talk about this before, like. You know, there were segments on Total Divas where, you know, they showed her a doctor's office dealing with all sorts of, you know, woman issues, and I don't think they were in, you know, kayfabe doctor's offices. I assume there's some reality to her having, you know, health issues, so I'm not sure how physically capable she is of ever actually getting that good.
Yeah, but like you said, it did crack me up that she was the only one in that whole segment not to talk. I was like, wise choice.
Oh yeah, well, very, very, very wise choice. I mean, her as the throwback to the old bad days of the Diva, of the Divas era, skin over everything, I think that she can be that one.
Right. And I'm trying to think of, Alexa Bliss. That character's gonna need some help.
It needs to be flushed out a little bit more, but I'm not against her character-wise. She's definitely proved in the ring. She had a really, really good match with Bayley. That aired a few weeks ago on NXT. She definitely has her rusting bitch face down, and you know some good mannerisms. She's you know they you know she started off as this almost Bayley like you know shiny happy baby face, but I think she found her niche as a bitchy heel. That's more to her natural.
A couple of the women seem to have been called up, probably a little, you know, sooner than I expected, and she was definitely one of them. But, she has, she's one where I think that she has enough talent that she'll probably figure it out at some point.
Yeah,
so I'm trying to think of what she did prior to wrestling. But there was some type of athletics involved in her her line of work.
She's from your hometown. I thought you would have all of her stats right coming into memory.
No, because I mean The only reason I know, it's kind of funny because I wouldn't pay attention to anything that's kind of connected to what she was doing. I get, because I feel like it's just something that, because it wasn't like Dana Brooke who did the fitness competitions. I should have had. I'm buying time till I get to Wikipedia. So.
Yes, she did. Oh. She played softball, track, kickboxing,
competitive.
Gymnastics,
oh, yeah, she was a competitive bodybuilder.
Competitive bodybuilding, who came competing in the Arnold Classic, which is probably right down the street from her, so probably easy. Yeah. Oh, she's quite a little athlete.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty. Oh, in cheerleading, she reached Division I status in college. I don't know what that means. did she? She actually.
Well, these Wikipedia people work fast. Her bio is already talked about tonight.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by that. Myself, it's just like, good lord, like there's probably stuff from the DNC being updated as we're talking. I guess I can see the potential in her, even though the character needs to be fleshed out. I guess I still I like Naomi as a character. Like, a fresh start for her is something that is kind of desperately needed. And it's good for her to be away from Tamina, too. I mean, I know that's for other reasons, I believe. But I think she... Oh, well, the women just work better as solo acts because there aren't enough of them to really... Well, I mean, unless you have a well-working faction, which they weren't. You know, you're better off being a singles competitor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I'm absolutely fine with Naomi getting a push on SmackDown. As I said, the one who's probably going to have the hardest time, because she definitely never was able to put it all together as a wrestler, that is Carmella. And her act would work better when she was with Enzo and Cass. As I said, she's been brought up without even having it together to the level of Alexa Bliss. Maybe on par with Eva Marie, but Eva Marie has more star qualities than Carmella does. Carmella without Enzo and Cass, without the Bayley friendship they've been playing up for months now. Just on her own on SmackDown, I don't think things are going to work out that well for her.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. Like, Enzo and Cass can do their own thing without her.
She was a little bit of a window dressing for them. You know, and she was fine in her role, but yeah, without her, they've lost nothing.
Yeah, and she kind of loses, if she doesn't lose everything, she loses about 75% of it, because I do think she has a certain charisma about her, that works, So, you know, again, the characters early, I think she'll kind of need to go, because being a queen is more of a bitchy kind of a thing. And she kind of still played it up as in, she's still kind of been babyface for the most part on NXT. So, I mean, I think almost going heel would... benefit her more than anyone else.
Right. She's been a baby face, but yeah, she has a very heelish delivery, and without Enzo and Cass, it's even more pronounced that it's a heelish delivery. So, again, there's a lot that needs to be fleshed out about her character-wise, and, well, she's gonna, and as far as her in ring is concerned, well, she's definitely got a sinker slim down.
Yeah, so that will be interesting. So yeah, and I think that about does it. I think we're concentrating on SmackDown because it did just happen.
That's happening. I guess we can. Well, we can also, before we move on to anything Raw related, just talk about the biggest thing on SmackDown. Your boy, your Kent State boy, Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, well, I didn't realize until the other day they mentioned that Dana Brooke is also a Golden Flash. So they're everywhere now. I did not think the WWE had the same faith in Apollo Crews that they have in Finn Balor. And it, as much as I've liked Crews since his debut in NXT, and I mean, he's definitely been misused since he got called up.
This wasn't the time.
But yeah, it just wasn't the time for him. So yeah. It was nice that he got included in the party. I think it's a good. Well, that's another one that it's just kind of you're hoping that they work better with him SmackDown now.
Hopefully, they'll be able to get more attention, both from the writers and from producers/agents and everything else to help move him along. I mean, he was featured pretty prominently tonight. He won the Battle Royal. He did well in the six-pack challenge. He did have a visual pinfall on Baron Corbin when Bray Wyatt pulled the referee out. He was totally screwed there, so if they want to go with Apollo Crews against Bray Wyatt as the feud, they can absolutely go there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that, but, I guess that was kind of the big part of the match to me, other than Ziggler winning. Like, I suppose I was a little surprised, because Ziggler has definitely been a guy, and it was kind of interesting that he
just needed to stop right there. He's just been a guy.
Well, and I don't know if it was the right direction necessarily earlier in the night, but they just had these really, all of the competitors in the six-pack challenge had these little video vignettes. And he kind of admitted to being lost for the last couple of years. And I don't know, you know, an opportunity like this, like, I don't think he's going to beat Dean Ambrose, but you know, he could be slightly more relevant than he was in the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is a big chance for him. It's it was a shocker. It was, of all the things that have happened in the last 3 days, I would call that the most shocking thing. I did not suspect for a second. Of the six guys out there, I would have put. Probably actually would have been at number six on my list of guys I thought were going to win that thing. So yeah, it really did come out of nowhere. It's an opportunity for him. I hope he makes the best of it. And it's the beginning of something for him. I don't see him winning. God, what a weird SummerSlam this is going to be. Look at this double main event. I mean, I guess maybe you could say that Brock and Randy Orton is the big star attraction, but
right,
these no one saw any of this coming.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's definitely a thing.
I mean, it's definitely not the most. Once again, so far it's not the most. It's something new. It's exciting in that sense, but definitely not the most star the most star powered lineup that they could have for double main event they could have for SummerSlam.
Right. And I think that that's not, it's not the worst thing. Because it's one of those things, too, and I think, well, somebody pointed it out that...
On the SmackDown side of things, the worst thing would have been Baron Corbin. Thankfully, that did not happen.
Oh, well, I thought you would have thought that the worst thing that could have happened is Mojo Rawley winning the Battle Royal and then going on to capture...
Don't even joke about that. Don't even joke about that. thankfully, that his only appearance on the show was losing a battle. Was losing the Battle Royal, just showing that they have no immediate plans for him.
I thought the immediate plans to me were revealed in the opening credits with him and Zack Ryder fist bumping each other.
Yeah. You know what? Two of them, if they can be, they can just be in one segment. I can fast forward through every week. That's good for me.
I like Zack Ryder. I do not, and like you, like Mojo Rawley.
No one does. I don't get where this comes from. I don't know how he got brought up. I don't know how he was released years ago, a while ago at least. I can't stand the man. He is probably my most hated person in all of wrestling. Ugh, Mojo Rawley. Ugh.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just don't get, like... That's why it kind of cracked me up that JBL was talking him up. I got a hoot out of that. I'm like, of all the new guys in this Battle Royal, you're going to talk of Mojo Rawley?
that's just not happening.
So
And you know what? He hasn't even done his shtick in front of the wider audience yet. He hasn't had the opportunity to turn off the wider audience yet, although that is coming.
Well, and that's another one that I suppose could work in his favor.
Don't be yourself, Mojo. Just don't be yourself, and everything's going to be okay.
We say to amplify your personality, but in this case, your personality sucks. We need to come up with something new.
Yeah. You just need to turn it all the way down. Don't ever say a word.
Oh, man. So, hold on. I off-tracked just by mentioning Mojo Rawley. That is my fault. We were talking about the worst outcomes.
Yeah. As far as who was actually in the match, that would of course have been Baron Corbin.
Oh.
So thankfully they have not. They don't see that much in him yet. So. But yeah, Dolph Ziggler is going to be in one of the big matches at SummerSlam, challenging for the championship. I didn't see it coming, but hey, I guess it's what they want to do. I don't think he's going to win. So
yeah, it's not the worst thing to have an establishing win for someone like Dean Ambrose with his title reign, and Ziggler does kind of provide that. But it'd be interesting afterwards. Again, like. Ziggler's another one that, I mean, I know that I liked the promo tonight, but he really needs to kind of, you know, stick with that. Like, this is another thing, like, it seems like they're going to stick with the separate brands, at least for the time being. So, I'm still holding out hope that they do like they did in the immediate... time after the first draft, which is they actually kept everyone separated, and it worked out for the better for everyone.
It looks like they're taking this seriously, and think of taking things seriously, that's exactly what Dolph Ziggler has to do for the next group. He has to be dead serious. No talk about showing off. Well, a little bit of that because it's a gimmick, but no talk about putting on a show or any of that crap. It's got to be about winning the damn championship. That has to be his focus. He has to be focused. He has to be serious.
And I mean, I guess he's done it before. He could do it again. Again, this brand extension could work out to everyone's benefit. So it'll be interesting to keep track of. Yeah, again, don't think he's going to win at SummerSlam. But, you know, he still has potential to come out of it for the better. And one guy whose potential is paying off quite quickly, who we've already mentioned. Finn Balor. I would say about as shot to the moon as you're going to get.
I didn't see it coming going into last night, but once the two four-ways were made clear, it was in my head. They're not putting him in here to lose on his first night. He was being positioned to be rocket shit straight to the top. It was a good move. I think it really is a move that needed to be made. Now that it's been done, I mean, he absolutely impressed in his two matches. He beat some big time players, including Roman Reigns. We'll get to that part, I'm sure, in a few moments. And yeah, the only thing he did not do, and this is going to be essential, is they really need to get over his personality. They did some great video work in the weeks leading up to Finn Balor defeating Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship in Japan last year. I mean, those videos were all, as they say in the television business, evergreen. They were just personality profiles. You could easily just put them on Raw as if they've never been shown anywhere before. There's nothing.
You are getting a wider audience. I mean,
yeah,
there's only a million plus subscribers to WWE.com, and you get 3 million people. Even on a bad week, you get 3 million plus watching Raw.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, they have to do some. Number one, they have to do some. Major personality work with Finn Balor, getting him over, and they do need to establish a personal conflict between him and Rollins. I know we know some people who are just jumping up and down at the prospect of this match just purely based on ring work, but that good matches nowadays are kind of a dime a dozen, to be honest. I mean, not that they're not always appreciated, but there's a lot of great workers out there. So, but this is going to be about establishing the personal conflict between Rollins and Balor over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and at least I feel like from what I've seen from Balor on NXT that he should be up to the challenge. Like, I don't think he's as good of a talker as Rollins is.
No. He's definitely not, actually. It's still something of a weakness in his game, so Rollins is going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting on the microphone. I mean, but again, it just, Balor's got, can more speak from the heart about whatever all this means to him, things like that. Just things that are more honest, raw, real. I think that he can muster that up, and they definitely also in the build up of the match have to come up with a reason for him to and explain what the transition to the demon is all about. Because I assume they're going to go there for his entrance and his costume at SummerSlam.
Well, and that was the next question. So, yeah, that works out quite nicely that you just rolled right into that.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that they bring that. I don't remember the leather jacket quite as much. Like, I guess I do remember it on NXT. I don't remember him kind of sashaying around like Michael Jackson or something like that.
I think the leather jacket's a recent addition to his act, and he's, once again, it's a little bit of a generic look. Once again, I think he got over with his ring work. He's got charisma, but I mean, I was promoting it from the start of him being the demon full time when he got to the main rocks. I didn't think they should do the, you know, he only pulls it out on the big events, because there is something missing from the presentation without it.
Yeah, I guess that'd be kind of interesting. I didn't ever think about them doing that.
Right, no, obviously that's not the direction they're going. I'm sure he's going to transform into the demon for SummerSlam, and he'll probably have a fairly spectacular entrance, especially with the main roster budget that they'll have. So
right,
you know, that will be, you know, that'll be real good. But of course, it has to be for the new audience. It does have to be explained what exactly it means when he transitions to the demon. Whether it means he gets, you know, Rollins at some point, you know, viciously attacks him, and then Balor cuts a promo saying that the demon will be released this Sunday. You know, something along those lines.
Right.
It doesn't have to be anything too complex. Once again, that's where a lot of people fail in wrestling, is when they try to make it too complex.
Yeah. I guess it'll be interesting to see. Like, they definitely had, like, all week it was just kind of like setting their direction for both brands. And this was kind of setting their, and I guess that's another interesting one, because I did ask Jeremy about it today, too. Since Seth Rollins and Finn Balor are wrestling for the Universal Championship, I figured I would ask you about your thoughts on the naming of the title.
It's definitely something different. I mean, they say it's based on, you know, the WWE universe, but it's kind of, yeah, you know, it's really going to be based on, oh, the universe is bigger than the world, you know. So the Universal Championship's on Raw. But yeah, it'll take some getting used to. Have to see what the belt looks like. I'll withhold my thoughts after SummerSlam on that. I don't think that it's fair. It's fair at this point.
Rip the
shreds.
If nothing else, it's kind of interesting. I kind of agreed. Jeremy mentioned that he's like, well, I haven't heard of that one before. You know, and that's what I was ready to rip it, and that was one where I'm like, oh, well, shit. It's the WWE Universe. Like, they've been saying it for years now. Like, how can you kind of complain? They're kind of going with their own gimmick here.
Right, yeah.
I said, okay.
They've never called their championship a Universal Championship before, but... You know, there's a first time for everything, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, there are all kinds of weird name championship belts out there, even in real sports. So fuck it, go for it. You're not going to go back to the WCW championship. I mean, I guess that is kind of the next the next question, really. Does Balor beat Seth Rollins, or is Seth Rollins continue to show that he is the number one draft pick?
That's a good question. I mean, there's the argument that you don't want to give a guy too much too soon, especially when you've got to factor in the casual audience needing to grow into accepting him. But there's also the thought process of let's not get this guy labeled a choke artist, a month into his run.
That is always the thing that is interesting about these type of debuts, because that dynamic does always happen. Like, even just Kevin Owens taking on John Cena in his first big match. I know that there is some aftermath, but when you put yourself in this position, you've got to make that choice, and it's always kind of an interesting choice.
There's an interesting balance that yeah, going between, is that doing someone too much too soon, and then, and also, waiting too long to pull a trigger on them. I mean, literally, it's funny that I'm mentioning this now, but, the thought I had was, you don't want to be Dolph Ziggler. You don't want to be the guy who's just up and down the roller coaster ride. Sometimes they feel like pushing him, sometimes they don't. He does something that they don't like, blah 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 blah, and then he's just another guy.
Right.
Now, I guess and once again, he's getting another chance, but time will tell how much people will still believe in him if they're really gonna take him seriously as a challenger for Dean Ambrose. You don't want that. You don't want that to happen to people. So, I don't think no matter what happens, I don't think Finn Balor is going to be squashed or anything. I
Right.
think that it should be an excellent match. Even if he goes down, it should go down. He'll go down swinging. He'll definitely live to as long as he can live to fight another day and stays in the upper echelon of the Raw brand. Everything should work out.
Yeah, that's I do think that he can absorb the loss, and I just think that it might be a little bit better to have Rollins up there for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, if SmackDown's gonna have a somewhat long-term babyface champion, it looks like, then Raw should have the heel, longer-term heel champion.
Yeah, that dichotomy always works too. So that when you have any type of inter-promotional matches, which of course will end up happening at some juncture,
Right, but no, not.
but not
Certainly not right away.
right. But yeah, it's kind of good to at least in that way communicate between brands, because then you kind of set yourself up better for those types of situations. Although I guess it would not be required to have the opposite style of champion. And I'm trying to think now, because I know that there is something else big on. Oh, how can I forget? Because we already talked about the Ladies of SmackDown. I think it is only correct to talk about the Ladies of Raw.
Yeah, they definitely. So yeah, I know. I feel like tonight's SmackDown was a good show, but I still felt a little empty because they just swung for the fences over and over on Raw last night, and a big part of that was the Women's Championship match between Charlotte and Sasha. Great match, and a new women's champion after Charlotte's, I think, near record-breaking win. I don't think she completely Nikki's Nikki Bella's record, but
yeah, I don't think she quite did.
Kind of out of nowhere, decided to switch the title on Raw instead of waiting for SummerSlam.
Yeah, that was kind of when they made the match. I'm like, man, Sasha's got to win this, right? Like, this is just kind of, like you don't set her up to lose this match, right?
And I thought that maybe Dana Brooke would interfere so they could go to a gimmick match at SummerSlam, you know, but that's not what they did. They, you know, they did the epic, you know, pay-per-view quality match with the title change right then and there. Be interesting to see where they go. I mean, I don't think they're mad at Charlotte for any reason. I think it was just to, you know, make a statement on this first Raw of the new era. I'm sure they'll rematch at SummerSlam, although maybe it loses a little something since, you know, the babyface goes in as the champion instead of having their big win at SummerSlam. But, you know,
right.
I'm sure they'll have another fantastic match. You know, they'll definitely, you know, I'm sure they'll be inspired to have a better match at SummerSlam. Under that spotlight, so yeah, we'll see where they go. But you know, it was really cool. Though. It was a really cool moment. And it was good to see.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I guess I liked a lot of what happened last night, but. Well, the last two nights, maybe I should say. But there's still a long way to go. Like, I don't know if Sasha being the champ is, you know, because we've just talked so much about the ratings recently. Like it'll be interesting if just the names changing will do anything. Because, I guess to me, the show still didn't do anything. Like, they changed some stuff up, but it still kind of had a similar feel to it. Both Raw and SmackDown... Is that just me, I guess, that didn't feel like there was that much of a... They changed the veneer to me a little bit more than they changed the bones of the situation.
I definitely felt that more on SmackDown. I felt like, despite a few new camera angles, it felt like a, you know... It just felt like another WWE show, a fine WWE show. Last night's Raw, it definitely felt a lot different. Between the long matches, the you know less talking, the return of squash matches. Yeah, I thought Raw actually. Might surprise people with you know all of Shane and Dean O'Brien's big talk, but I thought Raw was the show that took more steps forward.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because this is another one that Jeremy and I had talked about a little bit, and I looked back at the week before, and in a lot of ways it had a lot of similarities. There were quite a few squash matches that I barely wrote like a couple of sentences about the matches. The ones I guess on Raw this week had some type of a purpose. I felt like maybe the ones the week before were just like, ah shit, we just need to get the Battleground so that we can get to this brand split thing.
Right, yeah.
Which, and again, I guess I think that kind of helps. You know, having a direction. They've kind of been lost for a few weeks here. And this is just... Well, both shows, it's just a start. And it'll be... I guess both shows, to me, were good starts. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. Like, I don't... I guess I wasn't trying to rain on the Raw parade, but I still don't think that there is too much. There were probably less talking segments, but the match quality, and I think we started off the show by talking about it. It'll be hard to do that kind of match quality week in and week out for that show. So it's still going to be kind of the other stuff that helps fill that void in the long run. But having those matches happen on Raw definitely made it a very fun night.
Yeah. but someone who's not having many fun nights lately, and we touched on it a little bit earlier, Roman Reigns. Man, his stock is dropping faster than Nintendo's after people finally realize that they don't actually own Pokemon. Yeah.
I guess that's one of those things that you kind of need I guess in the world of WWE, I'm not surprised by them continuing to punish somebody. Just like when anyone wins in their hometown, like, I'm shocked. Like, it's always one of those things that McMahon always enjoys the punishment more than the reward.
Right, yeah. He's definitely still, they're still not happy. He's definitely in the doghouse. But they're still, you know, they're still not, don't look like, it's not like that they're ready to commit to him being a heel. It's mind-boggling at this point. I mean, they'd rather him be a second or third-tier babyface, you know, going against, I don't know, Rusev, Kevin Owens, or Jericho at SummerSlam instead of doing something, you know, more productive with him. I don't know, I'm looking at the Raw roster, who you could put against him as a heel, you know, right away, but, you know, Maybe he can cost Finn Balor the title at SummerSlam, and you go with that as an actual feud. But as a babyface, he's dead in the water. There's nothing more you can do to make him a top babyface. There's nothing. It's over.
It's over, Johnny.
It is. They've tried every trick in the book. It's just not going to happen. At least until, it'll be weird, but once he has that heel run and he starts being a badass heel, within 6 months to a year, people could be clamoring for him as a babyface. So, but they don't want to take that step. And I don't get it. It seems like they don't. And hopefully they'll finally figure it out, but.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely got the mixed reactions with the boos winning out.
Oh, it's not even a mixed reaction anymore. It's just maybe you hear a few high pitched screams of women, of female fans who thinks he's hot, who think he's hot, but they are being drowned out way more than ever happens.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to give that a little better, a little better listen, next time around. But, yeah, I do think that he's in more trouble, than Cena ever was in that department.
Yeah,
it's kind of odd. Like, the suspension was just bad timing in a lot of ways. And I don't think that helped his helped himself in the fans' eyes.
No, it didn't at all. And I mean, it obviously hurt him in Vince McMahon's eyes, and that was his biggest supporter and the only supporter that matters. So and he lost that or gave them reason to question him. Yeah, he's hurt pretty bad by it. mean, he didn't take it out on his performance. He did good work in the triple threat at Battleground. He did good work in his two matches on Raw last night. I will not, you know, fault him as a performer in that regard. He could have done what a lot of top guys do when they're set to lose and be kind of phased down, and he'll be pouty face about it, and
yeah,
I mean, a lot of people notice in that regard. A lot of people notice that in that Battle Royal tonight, as it started the show, that Del Rio kind of just sourpussing his way through the thing, and making it very obvious he's not happy with the spot. You didn't see that with Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I don't really want to off track to Del Rio.
Right, and neither do I. But I'm just using that as an example.
And I wasn't paying enough attention to the Battle Royal itself to know if Del Rio was half-assing it. Reigns did have a very good match with Finn Balor. I would not argue with another one, as he suggested in his post-ring interview, which was something I guess that I should admit to that much. Like, I think that was just a feature of Raw, the after-match reaction. I do like that. Because I do feel like, I mean, they used to do that when I was growing up, for God's sakes. So,
yeah,
I mean,
all the time. You got pre-match and post-match interviews, usually, on a lot of those shows. So, yeah, it's definitely something that should definitely make a comeback, and they should keep doing, yeah. I mean, either Roman Reigns was being sincere, or he was just kind of setting up a heel turn. I'm hoping it's the latter. I think maybe Roman Reigns versus heel Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor could have some potential.
Yeah. I mean, to go back to it always kills me that Roman Reigns looked good to people in the Shield as the same guy he basically is now, but somehow along the way, the fans turned against him, and and the tide keeps on going against that direction. But he could probably get a similar crowd turn if he goes back to more the Shield type of character.
Yeah, he absolutely could. Yeah, and right now there's no reason not to, because he's dying. He's dying out there as a baby.
And not only that, I mean, SmackDown probably could use another heel, because it's Bray Wyatt, and then he's got John Cena. Oh, hold on. No, that's Raw, isn't it? Shit.
That's Raw.
Who the hell?
Raw could definitely.
Seth Rollins is one.
Seth Rollins is one.
And is there anyone?
Well, you almost have Rusev, Kevin Owens, and Jericho all tied for second. I mean, I'm not sure how I would rank the three of them. But, they're all fairly strong heels.
Okay.
Maybe the side is, I don't know. Would you say Finn Balor's over Roman Reigns? I mean, for a month he is.
In the immediate future, Finn Balor technically is. Only if he wins the belt does he stay above Roman Reigns, in my opinion.
Right. And then, Sami Zayn, Cesaro. I mean, I'm trying to think how it all. But you need a major. Maybe if Roman Reigns goes full heel, you need at least one more. You need a major turn on the Raw side. Someone else to go babyface for it to balance out. But we'll see what happens. Once again, though, something's got to change.
Yeah, and are there any other, I mean, I feel like we definitely hit the two title reigns, and both the women's divisions. Was there anything else, worth mentioning before we, wrap things up? Yeah, well, I was just skimming through my Raw review, almost live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw, and yeah, there really wasn't anything else to go with. So I will just say that, despite the fact that this probably is the least Christmas-sounding beer that one Granny Mays gave to me. Frog Level Brewing Salamander Slam India Pale Ale is quite delicious. I drank this with a quickness and had to move to water. It's the perfect amount of hoppiness. It has a nice floral palette to it. It's 7% alcohol, so it's not completely out of control. Yeah, that's one tasty beer. I'm just gonna throw that out there. Like, I might have saved the best for last, because I do not think that I have any more, well, at least from Jeremy, I do not have any Christmas in July beers. That is the last of the lot. So, Bell Time beer of Stunt Granny 363. Frog Level, Salamander Slam. Tasty.
Alright.
So for, at DeFrango11, at, Chris Calamita, the brand, at Stunt Granny, everybody, have a good night.
Later.